may have heard earlier in the week, an apprenticeship expo was taking place in Talla Stadium, obviously in the west of Dublin. It was marking the beginning of Construction Work and Skills Week. And a reason for the shortage of apprentices in the construction sector was given as in part due to reluctance among younger people to, in quotes, get out of bed for 7 o'clock in the morning. This is a manager in the engineering sector saying this. His name is Conor Gray. He's apprentice development manager at engineering contractor Mercury. I'm joined now on the line by Tom Parlin. He is the Director General of the Construction Industry Federation. Good afternoon to you, Tom.
Good afternoon.
What do you say about Mr. Gray's comments?
Well, look, I'd be reluctant to contradict Conor Gray, because Mercury are probably the biggest employer of apprentices in the country. And I'd say he was probably a bit frustrated having attempted to acquire 35 extra lately, found very little interest. But on the other hand, I'd be reluctant to tar young people with any brush. Like, we have currently 18,000 construction apprentices in the system. They don't have any problem getting up in the morning at whatever time. And, you know, it's not for everyone. That's for sure. I know I was at a school lately where an employer was on about apprenticeship, and he said, look, the most important thing is you need to turn up for work. And you need maths generally as well. But that's important. You need commitment to be an apprentice. You have to be there when work begins and stick with it. And generally, I'd say there's no different. I'm pushing on a bit now, but people give out about young people when I was a young person. We've been giving out about them ever since. I wouldn't say the current crop of young people are any less motivated or more motivated than ever. I think there's a fine crop of motivated young people. I was out at a school this week already in Finglas, and they were just after I was presenting certificates for SafePass, which is the essential health and safety certificate before you can go on site. And this is where a school had approached the CIF and some of our members. We provided some financial support. Sullis were involved, a lot of collaboration. Even the tutor reduced his fees, and 25 young people were presented with their certs, and now they're itching to get on site just to get some work experience and see whether the field are suited to an apprenticeship or not.
It seems as if it's something that's avoided a lot. People tend to say, oh, you know, this crop of young people, whatever that generation may be at the time, is A, B, C or D, you know, some title is put on them. But as you were mentioning, it usually happens every generation. The generation before them, there's obviously a difference between the two, and that older generation will make these comments about the younger generation. Do you think comments like that, or views that some people may have towards people that are of the younger generation, turn them off getting involved in sectors like construction? Is that possibly a possibility?
Well, look at it. I see a heading on the Irish Times today, apprentice shortage due to early starts, says contractor. Now, I think that he may have just put that out as one of the reasons. And, you know, I said to the class of people in Finglas this week, and it probably goes over their heads a bit, that they are probably one of the luckiest, youngest generations of all times, that the world is their oyster. There are job opportunities everywhere. There are job shortages everywhere. And there's very good access to education everywhere. So whatever they might aspire to do, it's possible for them, which wasn't always the case before. But in order to be successful, I suppose, in any career, like, you won't become a doctor and qualify through university unless you commit yourself to a very, very intense studying and so on. Mm-hmm. And you need a certain aptitude as well. Now, there is a high level of people that have the aptitude for working with their hands, that love construction, whether it be getting a skill or being an architect or a design engineer or a QS or whatever. So there's horses for courses. And I don't think the intention of Conor was to, you know, in any way impugn young people or suggest that they weren't motivated. But I think he was expressing a certain frustration that having...
Yeah. And you did note, Tom.
Contractors are crying out for people at the moment.
Yeah, you did note that Mercury obviously has a high number of apprentices, and in the past has always had that, you know,
fantastic
profile
company
of that.
And have operations all over Europe at the moment and employing thousands of people.
Just to go back to what Conor did say, though, he said about a month ago they put out advertisement looking for about 35 people and they only got two applications. Now, we know there's a skill shortage across the construction industry, but supposedly, you know, according to people people in the sector, they are noting that there's an awful lot of tradespeople at the moment in terms of traffic coming down from Northern Ireland.
Yeah, and that's been traditional. We certainly have a lot of work going on here, whether it be in housing or in infrastructure or in foreign direct investment. So traditionally, northern people would come down and work here, and that's obviously badly needed. We've had a major problem over the last year or so with work permits, in that there was a massive delay of up to 20 and 30 weeks waiting to get a permit through. Extra resources have been put in there. There are thousands of people coming in every month now into the country, specialist people to work. So the industry needs to be fed. We need the people. The work is there. Projects need to be carried through. We need to deliver the houses. The IDA have had their best year ever last year in terms of attracting inward investment. Those factories and pharma plants and IT plants have to be built because their customers want them, and so on. So we will. But the CIF at the moment, together with support from the Department of Education, have a campaign going on in the schools now to encourage people. And it's obviously you need to implant the seed.
So I was just about to ask you that.
Instruction is a potential career for them.
Yeah, I mean, with anything, it's having the knowledge, isn't it? And starting off with people who are schoolgoers is going to be your best bet. So obviously you're getting back out into the schools and you're noting that. When we talk about the genders, obviously women are in the past so less likely to work in the industry. Are any steps being taken when it comes to, you know, the talks and the conversations you're having with school-aged children as to why it may be something that's appealing for women to apply to?
Very much so. Clearly, you know, if we're losing out on 50% of the population at the very start, we're starting off in a losing situation. So I think the figures at the moment say about 9% of the total workforce in construction are women. So clearly we have a lot of work to do there. And like, construction isn't about sort of heavy lifting and mucky boots and out in all weathers. There's a massive element of it now about adopting technology and so on. So there are lots of opportunities for women. And we've had every National Women's Day, we have a major event promoting careers. And very good, I think, what we're doing is identifying people that women that have been successful in construction already, you know, models of people who, like we had an interesting article, the lady even appeared on The Late Late Show, the first and youngest ever Irish tower crane driver, an 18-year-old girl from County Galway. And she was interviewed about why did she take up such a career, and she was explaining about how much she loved it and so on. And I'm sure that same girl, she could do anything, you know, in construction, but she chose to do that particular job. So it is a challenge, but we have career models. We have lots of people that have been very successful as women, both as apprentices, as engineers, as all sorts of things. And we hope to expand on that, because we would be remiss if we disregarded 50% of the entire population as potential workers in construction.
You mentioned an Irish Times article there that I was previously quoting from. Catherine Hannan is noted in this article also. She's an apprentice carpenter working for Dublin City Council, and she's one woman bucking the trend, it's noted here. She studied maths and she worked in a bank, and at 35 she decided to change her career. She had been apprehensive about joining a heavily male-dominated field, as it's worded here, but she found, in quotes, "nobody treats you any different." She says, "when we're out at the job and you're fitting a window, someone will shout up at us and say, oh, you're a woman doing that. And we'd be like, yeah, we're allowed work now." So it seems as if people like Catherine are enjoying the field. Thank you very much for joining me this afternoon. That is Tom Parlin, of course, of the Construction Industry Federation, Director General. Thank you, Tom.
You're very welcome.
Now, speaking to Tom Parlin there a moment ago, the Director General of the Construction Industry Federation, we were touching on younger people not wanting to leave bed for 7 a.m. And that may be one of the reasons why the sector is suffering a skills and job shortage. But the Irish Examiner has posted this story by... the Irish Times has published this story about an hour ago. Shauna Bowers is the author of it. And the headline is, "Shortage of Young Staff to Work Summer Festivals Causing Strain on the Arts Sector." So at about 2:45 this afternoon, I am actually going to be speaking to Peter Boland about ticket prices for the summer festivals. But this is about the labour shortages. So a number of harsh economic realities are putting the viability of festival and events at risk, a representation organisation organisation did say. That's the Association of Irish Festival and Events, also known as IFA. The executive director said that there is a particular difficulty in finding staff to work during the upcoming events. He is quoted as saying, "You have to understand that normal rites of summer passage for the 15 to 23 year old generation is gone due to the COVID-19 break. You have kids now who are leaving cert or pre-leaving cert who haven't carried a glass, washed a pot, mowed a lawn or done anything between 14 and 17, so they're not socialised to work. The festival and event sector, where they could have been paying for stewards or car parking attendants or casual labour, are finding it very tough. There used to be a great crowd of young people who would move from one festival to the next, but they're gone to the ski slopes or Bella Medina or doing stuff out in the Med." That's interesting. I wonder, are they? With like the current cost of living, can they afford it? Can their parents afford it? I don't know. Dermot Desmond is of MCD Promotions. Lots of people will know him. And he said that the increased cost to put on a show will not result and increased ticket prices this year, as those productions are on sale. But he did say the price rise could move into 2023, and it probably will move into 2023. He was noting, in addition to the shortage of labour, it looks as if the tickets will increase next year. And a lot of people working with him, he's saying, during the pandemic found alternative employment, and that trend seems to have continued. But Peter Boland will touch on the fact that, would say, when it comes to the summer festivals and stuff, maybe smaller festivals, not exactly the music festivals, the insurance costs have increased this year in 2022. So ticket prices are set to rise this summer. Dermot Desmond of MCD there speaking about more gigs and that type of thing from those ticket prices from 2023 are to increase. So basically across the board, you're going to spend more to go to any sort of festival or gig. Our WhatsApp and text line here at KFM is 0833 97 97 97, and Dave has been in touch and I'm laughing at your message, Dave. You're getting straight to the point. You wish me a happy Friday, which I greatly appreciate, and then you ask me, do I have any Curragh tickets to give away? I do not, Dave. I have no tickets to give away to you this afternoon, but I appreciate you at least telling me to have a happy Friday before you ask me that. Obviously a really busy week. Weekend. It's beginning at the Curragh. Is it 4:20 this afternoon? I will double check the time, because at the moment my computer is frozen on me, so it's kind of acting up. But I know, of course, KFM will be there throughout the weekend for the 2,000 guineas tomorrow. That's Saturday, and the 1,000 guineas on Sunday. I think Owen and Clem are going over tomorrow, and on Sunday I believe it is Paul going over to the Curragh. So yeah, the 3-day Irish guineas is beginning at 4:15, not 4:20, so 4:15 this afternoon, and it's going to be a really good weekend, and hopefully you all enjoy it. And everybody who won tickets over the past few days, I hope you enjoy it, of course. Now, do we know the difference between use by and best before dates? I think lots of us don't, but it's becoming more of, I guess, an issue in the forefront of our minds, especially as the cost of living increases. I have the technical executive with Safe Food on the line. That is Dr. Mairead McCann. Hello, Mairead.
Hiya, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you very much. So, exactly what is a use-by date and what is a best-before date?
Well, I suppose the easiest way to remember the difference between both is, I suppose, a best-before date is a guideline, whereas a use-by date is a deadline. So, the use-by date tells you when the food will become unsafe to eat. So you shouldn't really eat food past the use-by date. Yeah, and you'll see use-by dates on the packaging of foods like, I suppose, cooked meats, dairy products, like pre-prepared salads, things that you typically keep in your fridge, I suppose. And I suppose just remember too that the use-by date is only valid as long as you store the food properly and the packaging is sealed, etc.
So am I right to say not every item will have both dates then?
No, they typically have one or the other. So then I suppose a best before date tells you about the quality of the food. So I suppose it's not about safety, it's about quality. So just because the best before date has passed doesn't mean the food is safe to eat. So I suppose you can use your own judgment when it comes to a best before date.
Okay. So butter, yogurt, like the dairy products, I know they have best before dates. So
they've used by dates.
Used by dates.
So best before date is typically on food that you store in your cupboard, so pasta, biscuits, things like that. You know, I suppose, then you can use your own judgment on them. It's the quality will start to deteriorate after the best before date, but they're not unsafe to eat.
Okay, because I saw this article in the Irish Examiner, and you, well, not yourself, but Safe Food were defining the difference. And somebody was noting here that bacteria can't usually grow on certain types of food, like pasta and breakfast cereal. So food poisoning, it says here, is not a concern, and a sniff test should do the trick. Is that advice you would actually give, though, as a tech executive with Safe Food?
Well, if it's the best before date, it's fine because, bacteria doesn't typically grow on dried foods like pasta. But if it's foods that I've just explained that have used by date, you should never use a sniff test, no, because you should always go by the safe, the used by date, sorry. Like, you can't smell or see harmful bacteria on food, so you're not going to smell it if there is harmful bacteria in it. And I suppose the kind of illness you can get from the foods that we're talking about that can be pasta used by date is food poison bacteria listeria, and I suppose it can be quite serious in people with weakened immune systems, so pregnant women, young children, the elderly. So really you need to obey use by dates, and I suppose as well you have to think about food waste, and if food's coming up to its use by date, you should check regularly the foods in your fridge and make sure that you eat them or cook them, or you can freeze them if they're coming up to the use by date, and then that avoids you throwing food away.
So can you take them from the fridge to the freezer before the use by date?
You can, yeah.
Okay.
As long as before the use by date, that is fine.
I don't know why I always thought that you had to freeze them immediately. So you can freeze them from the fridge?
You can freeze them from the fridge, as long as they're not beyond their use by date.
Yes, it's not beyond, exactly. Okay, very interesting. I don't know if you have noted this yourself, but on Twitter it was quite popular over recent weeks, and I see there is a report in the Irish Mirror yesterday. It's issued by the Food Safety Authority. Several popular food items have been pulled from Irish shop shelves in recent weeks amid food safety fears. Now, you're obviously with Safe Food, not the Food Safety Authority.
Yeah.
But have you noticed yourself there has been an increase in these recalls over the past few months?
Well, yeah, I suppose there has been, there was a lot of media attention about salmonella in chocolate and things like that. And that's, I suppose, salmonella has been detected in certain products and then they recall them so they don't reach the consumer, so that we keep everyone safe.
Now, would you have tips for people who may not call themselves a savvy shopper, but now with the rate of inflation and the cost of living overall, want to try and make changes in their life to help their bank balance, I guess?
I suppose, yeah, we have a lot of tips on our website, safefood.net. I suppose we have noticed that, people throw away a lot of food from our previous research. Up to 30% of the food we purchase is often thrown away, and it can add up to about €20 per week on food that is wasted. I suppose, advice we'd have is before you go shopping, check the food you have in your freezer so you're not buying food unnecessarily. Make lists of ingredients you need. I suppose the usual one, don't go out shopping when you're hungry.
I do it all the time.
Tend to over shop and buy food you don't need.
And bad food.
And bad food. Stick to your list, I suppose, and always check the use by date in the shop. You know, if you go to the back of the shelf, you'll probably get one with a longer shelf life. And I suppose just be aware that if you buy food, that should be stored in the fridge. But as soon as you go home, put it in the fridge and I suppose just store the food the way it's supposed to be stored on the packets of food. Yeah, and then as I said earlier as well, if things are in your fridge, just keep a check on use by dates. And as I said, eat it, cook it or freeze it.
Yeah.
And that's the best way to avoid food waste, I suppose.
Yeah, it really is. And I don't know why I got it in my head that you had to put it straight into the freezer or not at all. So that's good for me personally to know. And that's really good advice for everybody out there. Do have like a quick review of your fridge, maybe even every few days, because you do forget what you've bought and you could be saving yourself some money by doing so. Thank you so much for joining me this afternoon. That is Dr. Mairead McCann. She's the technical executive with Safe Food. I'm just going to go back to this article here in the Irish Mirror, and it's noting the recalls that have made the headlines of late. So Just Free, that is, I don't know if that's Lidl, is it? I think that's a Lidl owned brand of gluten-free stuff. So a batch of their Just Free gluten-free pudding is being recalled as a precautionary measure due to undeclared gluten. That's like my worst nightmare, gluten detected. Then HowHow Chicken Flavour Instant Noodles. If you're a fan of those, they have been recalled. Villani Italiano Salami. That has been recalled. Just check for any of these. You possibly could have them in your fridge. Marks and Spencer's cooked chicken products. So the Food Safety Authority did say that Marks and Spencer's are calling it because some of the chicken may contain a possible presence of salmonella. So do note that, and you can get more information on it. Like, there's a few different products here. One is the Carnation Chicken Deli Filler, the 14-piece classic sandwich platter. If you continue on down here, well, there's about... there's about 11 or something of those chicken that have been recalled from Marks and Spencer, just if you're a shopper there. Then if you go down a little bit further, you can see Frey Bentos, just chicken pie. I don't know if anybody does that. Mars Bounty ice cream bars. Absolutely not. I do not like Bounty. But they have been recalled due to the presence of the unauthorized pesticide ethylene oxide. And if you continue again, more gluten-free stuff. Tesco are recalling their free-from digestive biscuits due to the small presence of small metal pieces. Kinder Sweets, we know that. We spoke about that a few weeks ago. Little Paella. I love a paella, but like a proper one when you're in like Spain or something. Dunstore's semi-dry cherry tomatoes. They've been recalled due to the presence of pesticide chlorpyrifos methyl. I have no idea what that is. But maybe Google it just in case, because I probably made an absolute hames of trying to pronounce that. But anyway, thank you very much for joining me this afternoon. That is Dr. Mairead McCann, tech executive with Safe Food, defining the differences between the use by and the best before date. The government excise release on motor fuel are on the verge of being wiped out. That's according to AA Ireland. And I'm joined now by the head of communications, Paddy Cumin. Good afternoon, Paddy.
Hi, Ciara.
Thank you very much for joining me. I think a lot of people, Paddy, will say they're already wiped out even within a couple of days of the excise reliefs being announced by government. Prices for premium diesel have gone yet again above €2 despite the cuts. Gardaí say the rising prices of fuel could lead to an increased level of theft into the summer. And you're noting that motorists should be prepared.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately as well, in Kildare, where you guys are based, that tends to be one of the more expensive counties. Certainly in the last time we saw the increases well above €2, it was Kildare County which had a lot of the very heavy prices. So look, it kind of was inevitable for a number of reasons. Obviously, the reduction in the excise duty did give us a temporary relief. We, at the time, back in March, April, we were suffering from really high oil prices. The oil prices are fluctuating a lot again, but really what's going to be signaling a lot of this is the fact that we get a lot of our diesel via Russia, and there will be, you know, increasing restrictions or people backing away from taking Russian oil as we go on, you know, culminating in what looks like going to be a ban by Europe of taking Russian oil by the end of the year. So diesel in particular, Ciara, seems to be one of the ones which will probably start increasing and keeping increasing for the time being, as supplies vary.
And Paddy, would you have a percentage of, let's say, the majority of cars in Ireland, the difference between petrol and diesel? What's the split there, percentage wise? Would you know?
It depends on any given year. At the moment, in terms of new car sales, this is the first year in a long time that petrol is now in the majority. So diesel was for years the main bulk, but it's about half in terms of the car park as such. That refers to the kind of whole overall, because there was a period where petrol was the dominant one and diesel was the dominant one. So it tends to balance out.
So that means that 50% of the residents here are going to potentially struggle with getting diesel for their cars, is that right?
No, I wouldn't go that far and say that they're going to struggle with getting diesel, but you know, supplies are fine and there doesn't seem to be any issue with that. But what might happen is the prices might just go up a little bit if there's a slightly more finite resource of those. You know, we're not at that stage yet of talking about restrictions or reductions, but certainly the costs might increase, and obviously that affects hauliers, it affects work vehicles, so there are other people at play as well. And look, what we've always said all along is the increase in prices of fuel tends to affect people who don't have alternatives. So if you're in the city centre of Dublin and you've got a Lewis and a Dart and cycle lanes and the like, that's fine. But if you're in a rural part of the country that doesn't have a brilliant transport network, public transport network, then you have no alternative to you but to use your car. And those people, certainly some of them on lower wages, are most affected.
I mean, if you, how close we are to Dublin, you know, we do have a lot more transport than certain other areas of the country, public transport, that is. But a lot of people would travel to Dublin every day by car because they just feel like they cannot possibly get there in a reasonable time or without having to be up hours earlier to get on public transport. You did also know, Paddy, that dropping your speed on the motorways can save fuel by as much as 30%. Go into this a little bit more.
Yeah, it's a fact. We've tested it ourselves because, you know, obviously when fuel prices were very high, we took measures of what happens if you do reduce your speed. Now, we're not advocating becoming an obstacle on the road, but on a motorway, on the left-hand side lane, trucks are restricted generally to 90 kilometres per hour. So if you were to drive at 100 kilometres per hour in the left-hand lane, you're not really going to get in anyone's way. And the difference between driving at 100 and 120 can be north of 30% in terms of how much fuel you will save. And that might not seem, you know, obviously it might take you a little bit longer, but over the course of a very long journey, say you were driving from Dublin to Cork, for example, you know, you could save potentially half the journey back by...
Really?
If I went
I went from 120 to 100?
Yeah, you know, by it's physics, you know what I mean? Driving, pushing a very heavy vehicle through the air, making it go faster uses an awful lot more fuel. So reducing even it back to 100 and getting into that habit will save you considerable amount of fuel versus, say, saving from 90 to 100. So it's that we found, and it is established that that moving between those two speeds can make quite a significant difference. The other thing as well here is people drive around with the wrong tire pressures. You should check your tire pressures every 2 weeks. Some people don't do it ever. That can have an effect. And also there are people who, you know, drive around with golf clubs in the boot and all sorts of junk in the boot, and that doesn't help either.
Did you have a look at the prices of fuel across the county, would say, or the country today, for example, Paddy?
Yeah, we've been having a look, and you know, on a broad spectrum, we're not quite seeing pricing going over for regular diesel over €2, but it is into the late 190s. So we're not at that point yet across the country. But then I think we're a little bit away from that yet. But as you said, some of the premium products are going across to the €2. And really, look, for people, I suppose it's also a point to note to just be careful when you're at the fuel pumps, because sometimes you're at the petrol station and the two pumps can look quite similar. You might just grab the first one that comes to your hand, and you might be filling a tank full of premium that's 10 cent or 15 cents a litre more. So just maybe be mindful of that when you're filling up.
Yeah, that's a good tip. I'm always worried that I'll put in the wrong fuel. I know they won't fit into your tank if it's not the right fuel for your
car. Oh, it can happen.
Yeah, I always have to double check. I don't know why I don't trust myself. Paddy, thank you very much for joining me this afternoon.
Bye-bye.
That is Paddy Cumming. He is the head of communications with AA Ireland. So some tips there, but it looks as if the government excise reliefs on motor fuel are on the verge of being wiped out. So people may have heard earlier today, ticket prices for summer festivals and shows are set to rise due to the soaring cost of insurance premiums and rocketing expenses. I am joined now by Peter Boland of the Alliance for Insurance Reform. Good afternoon, Peter.
Good afternoon, Ciara.
Should event organisers and event goers be, I guess, concerned about this news today?
Well, this has been coming for some time. We've been talking about this for the best part of 5 years now, Ciara, and it hasn't come out of the blue. I think the big issue for event organisers is that they've, having survived the pandemic, they're emerging from the pandemic to discover that not only is insurance not sorted, but in fact liability premiums are going up by an average of 16% according to our own research. And remember, that's on top of huge increases over the last 5 years or so. So they clearly have to pass that cost on, and that's where the issue is. And what's even more distressing is that we're talking to increasing numbers of smaller festivals in particular who just cannot get cover or cannot afford what they're being offered. So we're seeing a diminution in just social activity around Ireland on the back of this. And the big irony of all of this is that this is the one that can be solved by government. As you're well aware, there are loads of cost of living issues going on at the moment. But insurance costs can be addressed. And government know what the issues are in terms of the judicial guidelines, in terms of the duty of care applicable to event organisers, in terms of the way that the Personal Injuries Assessment Board is organised. And they're working on those issues, but it's just not happening fast enough.
You noted the smaller festivals there. It's been reported in the Irish Independent today a handful of arts festivals have already been cancelled this year. That's because of the insurance issues. Six-figure insurance premiums, it's saying here, to the cost of hiring marquees nearly doubling, and it's expected to be an expensive summer for events and businesses trying to recover from COVID-19. And I do understand businesses will have been hit, you know, terribly, especially the tourism sector over the past 2 years. But consumers themselves will have been hit really hard. And since, you know, the 24th of February, whenever the invasion of Ukraine began, the cost of living has skyrocketed also on top of already a high inflation period. So is this going to maybe turn people away from attending events?
Well, I really would hope not. I mean, from day one, we've been saying that if this was not sorted, it would damage the fabric of Irish society. And I want to be proven wrong on that, because it doesn't bear thinking that a country that is so energetic and so culturally aware and so culturally active would suffer such serious damage to its cultural side. So I don't want this to happen, and we as an alliance don't want it to happen. So what we're saying to government is, listen, get a move on with the reforms. We had major reforms to the duty of care legislation proposed this week. But proposals are grand, but they're not reforms. And so the Department of Justice need to move very quickly to get those proposals enacted. And ultimately, it's additional competition in the insurance market that will bring the price down. Minister of State Sean Fleming has acknowledged that and set up an office to generate insurance competition in December 2020. But there have been no announcements of additional insurers yet. And that's at the heart of the issue. Get the reforms through, get the competition in, and let's move on from this. Because remember, Ciara, we meet European counterparts regularly among our member organisations, and they can't believe that insurance is causing the damage in Ireland that it is, because it's just not an issue anywhere else.
So if something was to happen, we're in the summer season already, you know, it's the end of May. I said there a few moments ago, a handful of arts festivals have already been cancelled. Some of the agricultural shows have confirmed their entry prices likely to rise by between 5 and 10 euro. And event organisers in general have said they're likely to increase the entry fees by up to 10 euro in some cases. In terms of timeline, how quickly could this possibly happen if government were to take action?
Well, the judicial guidelines have been in place for a year, and the benefits of those reductions in damages for minor injuries must be passed on by insurers. That's an ongoing process. The new duty of care legislation could be enacted this year. We would expect that the legislation reforming the Personal Injuries Assessment Board will be enacted this year. We're in at the Enterprise Committee next week on pre-legislative scrutiny on that. So all of this can happen very quickly, and insurers then must follow up with their side of the bargain. They must pass on the reductions, because remember, since the judicial guidelines were put in place in April of last year, the risk associated with every premium has reduced, but that benefit has not been passed on by the incumbent insurers.
Okay, well, I appreciate your time this afternoon. You are, of course, Peter Boland of the Alliance Insurance Reform. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, Ciara.